We're all about tradition on this podcast, and with it being our birthday recently, that means we need to dust off the Toy Story trilogy for the fourth time on that song from that movie. Woody, I know what your problem is.
Going on?
I don't know.
You're just like me. Trash. Thank you for joining that song from that movie, The Journey Through the Very Best and Worst of Movie Songs. I am your, for the fourth time in a row, your intergalactic Space Ranger host, Dietrich. And joining us is the man who has presumably seen this movie around 5,000 times, Alex.
Yeah, and still I didn't get that line.
I'm really surprised.
Yeah. I have seen this film a lot, but it's probably so many times that it just washes over me now, and I can't remember anything specific about it.
And completing the lineup is the man who is here against his will, Ben.
I hate this film. I'll do everything I can to talk about it as little as possible. Oh, if I do talk about it, it was with pure hate.
Better move on to a different segment before Ben leaves the Zoom chat.
Can't underestimate how much I hate this film.
I would like to know, in the past fortnight, what have you been watching?
Lots of films.
Have you actually?
Oh, really? Go on.
I've watched four films.
You've watched four films?
Wow. I've watched four films since in the last week. Two at the cinema. So I'm going to run through them.
Two at the cinema?
Two at the cinema. I'm going to run through them quickly in order of good to bad. And it is a specific order. So the first one is a film called The Selfish Giant, which I don't know if you've seen, but it's... No.
Not heard of that.
It's based on like an off the Oscar Wilde short story, very loosely. It's set in Bradford. Obviously, Oscar Wilde was not. But yeah, a really, really good film. Brilliant. Devastating. Would highly recommend. I don't really want to talk too much about the plot because I think, you know, spoilers. But it's a good film. Would recommend. I think it's on Amazon, but I could be wrong. Second, one film I did see at the cinema, although I think it is now available on TV, but it was one of those weird toddler event things. So there was like two people in there and it cost £2. Was the DC Super Pets, which I thought was pretty good. Like a really sort of solid family film, but it had some really good risque jokes in there, which are always great in a family film. And it really felt like it was made by people who knew what they were doing and what they were trying to create, which I'll come on to on the last film. The third film I watched was the Luther film. Have you guys watched the TV show, the Luther TV show?
I haven't.
Yeah, the film wasn't great. I mean, the first season of the TV show is really good. It gets progressively worse, and the film continues.
That's not how you want a TV show to go.
Yeah, well, what happens is it gets progressively outlandish and stops making any sense, and all of a sudden... You can't understand how it's set.
I don't know if it was this film, but I feel like I saw a trailer and he looked like he was in the Arctic and I was like, why are you there?
Yeah, that does happen in the film. It's actually in Norway. And
why are you there, Luther?
I mean, I've watched the film. I couldn't tell you. He's there at one point and it's like, why? It was like, they almost like, well, we have to up it from the TV show, which is set predominantly in London. Let's send him to some kind of snowy.
It's the Fast and the Furious problem, isn't it? Why is Ludacris the best tech expert in the world?
I think that's actually a really good comparison. That's because Too Fast, Too Furious was on the other night, and I had to kind of explain it to Helen how it went from what it was to what it is.
Yeah. Ludacris went to being like a really slightly streetwise car dealer race organizer to.
Can hack banks.
Yeah, pure hacker man. He can hack banks from space.
The thing to mention is really, like, I feel like Idris Elba really wanted to be Bond. Couldn't be Bond, so he's turning Luther into Bond. And if you watch the film to the end, which is credit to you if you can make it that far, you'll see what I mean. And then finally, the last film. Now, I don't know if either of you have seen it yet. I obviously said this was in descending order, best to worst. So the last film I saw at the cinema was the Mario film.
Oh, no.
Have either of you seen it?
I haven't.
I've seen it in certain ways that may not be... at the cinema.
Okay.
Depends who's listening.
Okay. Well, I'll give my take on it first if you want to give your take on it, but I was very, very disappointed with this film.
Yeah, very.
It's rare that, like, while watching a film in the cinema, I felt so disconnected from what I was seeing, but it was just so abject. And I mean, this is clearly a written line, but I put it was so flat it was practically an 8-bit side-scroller.
I guessed how the film was going to go and was very disappointed that I was right.
Yeah, but it was just so painfully unfunny as well.
Yeah.
I don't understand how, like, because this is a comparison I was going to make with DC Super Pets. DC Super Pets, very just standard film, but had some really good jokes and then it kept you going. This film was just like, there was just like no way. I think part of the problem was that it was trying to take it just slightly too earnestly, but there was no sense of like irony or humour at all.
Yep.
And like you can say what you want about the 1993 film, but at least it wasn't boring.
Oh well, no, we can say lots of amazing things about that film.
Well, yeah, but it wasn't. Yeah, I mean, you know, like everyone says, you know,
it's a great film.
It's a bit of a treasure in a strange way.
My 4K Blu-ray sits proudly on my shelf.
Yeah, but it's definitely not boring, is it? The original.
Oh, no,
I mean, it's,
no.
It's crazy, but it's not boring.
It's got full Blue Velvet Dennis Hopper in it.
Yes, but this was just like I'd never felt like void after a film. I think visually it looked pretty good. Like, I think it, you know, very much looked like the games. I mean, I don't think there was anything incredible going on visually. But there's a couple of, like, bits that were like, yeah, that's kind of good. But even the plot just was like, everything felt really rushed. And it was like, here's an obstacle. It's like, oh, they've already got around the obstacle.
Save it for the episode, Alex. We've got a song. It's got a song. It's a good song.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was one of the best bits. And that's saying something, because that wasn't that funny. That could have been better. So, yeah, I don't really want to talk about it anymore, because it hurts me inside.
That's like, it's like me in this film.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe.
I'm trying to think what else. I saw John Wick.
Was it the best action movie you'd seen in, what was it, the last 10 years?
Sorry, Dana, it wasn't.
I am surprised. What do you think's better?
What do I think's better? The other John Wicks?
Really?
Yeah. I mean, like, it's one of those things where I'm enjoying, but I just don't care about John Wick lore. I don't go see John Wick for the lore. I'm like, well, that's cool.
Right, so why are you picking the previous ones? Like, other than the first one, like the second one is
because
non-stop
lore? Because you're going in not knowing what's going to happen. Like, and it's kind of like the ridiculousness of like every single person in the criminal underworld is scared of this John Wick guy. And then it doesn't matter anymore.
Baba Yaga.
Because you know he's not going to struggle.
Okay, but what about the other headshot?
No, it's cool as shit, and I thought a lot of it was good. But sometimes I just think that's cool, and then I can only say that's so long for a sequence of like 15 people. Just if they all just ran in at the same time, it's the same problem of any film. They all just ran at him at the same time. He couldn't fight them all.
But if they all ran at him and all swung at the same time, they'd all just hit each other and they'd all fall in a perfect circle around John Wick.
Well, yeah, yeah. It's the Big Trouble in Little China problem. And then I saw the Dungeons & Dragons movie, which was, you know.
Well, you're a big Dungeons & Dragons guy, so like, if I'm going to see it, I need your backing.
Yeah, I think it's entertaining. I think it's like, it's stupidly quick in the sense of they're trying to get to A to Z in 2 hours by filling it with world building and lore, and sometimes you just have to like go, okay, I'm gonna have to go with this. But in the sense of like dialogue, screenplay, it's actually quite funny. It is ridiculous, you know, in a pure high fantasy way.
But is it true that Reynard Shattermast appears in the post-credit sequence?
Reynard Shattermast, I don't think
what does that mean?
Love it.
That was my character in Dungeons and Dragons, Alex. Come on.
It was, yeah, sorry, I forgot about that.
Terrible, terrible.
I'm looking forward to seeing it. I think it looks good.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. It's definitely fun.
D, watched any films?
Yeah, the segment's gone long enough. No.
Moving on.
So, happy birthday!
Woo!
Yeah, yeah. Good Toy Story episode.
It's our birthday tradition of covering a Toy Story movie. And it's the big one. It's the one we've been building towards for the last 3 years, since our very first episode.
Oh, yeah.
You know what? My first insult of this film, I'll keep it brief. I would hate this film less if there was a fifth Toy Story.
Well,
and there will be soon.
Ben, come on. You're getting ahead of yourself there.
Today, if you haven't guessed already, we're covering Randy Newman's I Can't Let You Throw Yourself Away from Toy Story 4. So to find out what was happening in the world when the movie came out.
Time for some history.
In brackets, sort of, because it was only a few years ago. 4 years ago, to be precise.
Is it really? Wow.
Well, ish. But anyway, yeah. So it's not quite four. It's three. But yeah. So go back to June 2019. You know, a time that we will reflect on as a simpler time. So Theresa May resigns as Prime Minister, paving the way for a man who once speared German footballer Steffen Freund in the testes on live national TV.
If only you left it there.
Yeah.
If
only he left it there. On top of British culture.
Well, he did attack that guy, didn't he, who stole someone's bike or whatever it was. So that was kind of good as well. Those are the two things that it should have ended in.
Do you remember when he went to Beijing for the 2008 Olympics and then said that table tennis was coming home to London?
Fucking hell, it's all how do these people get to this point? Yeah.
Money.
We got it.
It's a lot easier to find news for this year, so I'll just reel off a few. Apple announced it was shutting down iTunes. They're replacing it with multiple apps. I didn't even know this was a thing, but
iTunes is still a thing, isn't it?
Well, it says it was shutting down iTunes and replacing it with multiple apps.
It's the Apple Store now, isn't it?
Yeah. So I don't think it's called iTunes.
It's just not called they got rid of all that i-based products.
I wish someone had told us. It says iTunes in our podcast thing where it's like, leave a 5-star review on iTunes.
No, Apple Store. No wonder we're not getting any listeners.
People are still trying to log onto their iPod Nanos.
Trying to log onto
Jay-Z was named the world's first billionaire rapper by Forbes. Now, I think that that's almost too specific to be a thing.
I'd have thought it'd been Dre because of Beats.
Yeah.
Take it up with Forbes, Ben.
Well, they don't answer my calls.
We've already spoken about one of them, but here's the other one. Donald Trump began a 3-day trip to London by calling Mayor Sadiq Khan a stone-cold loser.
Politics.
The UK chart was topped by Ed Sheeran and Justin Bieber with a song called I Don't Care. I don't know that song, but I'm assuming it was good.
I don't care.
I love it. No, that one.
And film releases. There were many film releases, of course. It was the summer. They included Yesterday, which our very own Ben has a cameo appearance in, of course.
Yep, true.
We should cover that at some point.
Yep. We should. Yeah, but they didn't have any original songs in it, did they?
Yeah, but that's got an original Ben cameo.
It's got the original Ben cameo. The film Midsommar came out as well, which has got an amazing scene where someone's heads get bashed in.
And Ben's in it.
Oh, thank God I'm not.
The Spider-Man Far From Home, which of course Ben is not in because he was killed in the first one.
That's true. Good.
And of course, Ben's favourite film. There's a lot of Ben talk on this episode.
It's good. You're building me up.
Toy Story 4 was released. Yay.
Boo.
It was the fourth installment of Pixar's most beloved, longest running series. I'm just hamming it up for Ben.
Yeah, I know you are.
Those are the characters we know and love, cherish. You're now under the banner of Bonnie. Boo. Following the departure from Andy at the end of Toy Story 3, embark on a road trip where they encounter new friends, as well as some old ones as well. So, firstly, thoughts now. Who should we go to first?
Gusty.
I feel like I should go first, because yes, I kind of need to get my two cents in before Ben goes full scorched earth on this podcast.
Yes.
Then I'd be left to, like, try say my opinion while stood in a field of ash and rubble around me. Anyway, so I've only seen Toy Story 4 once, and whilst I enjoyed it, I think once was enough for me.
I'm the Darth Sidious in the background, like, good, let the hate flow.
It was nice to see the characters again, get to check in with Woody, Buzz, and everybody, and less so some of the newer characters, other than Forky, who was fantastic.
Nope.
No, just say how they're getting on, but that's about it. Like, Forky is good as a concept, but they don't really do much with him. It almost feels like it should have been its own, like a Forky, a Toy Story movie, if they wanted to do something a bit different in this world.
Mm-hmm.
You're selling me on that concept.
I think the best way to describe Toy Story 4 is that it doesn't offend me. It doesn't diminish from the trilogy for me. But also, I guess I would not, and I guess will not, come back to it. Just the once was sufficient. If I went to watch a Toy Story movie, I'd just pick the first one or the third one. Although, this movie probably does have my biggest belly laugh of any of the Toy Story movies. I've not seen Lightyear, so you can throw that in as well. I can't imagine that has many jokes.
It doesn't. It's awful. It's terrible.
Can you guess which moment it is? Or which little joke?
I really enjoy the plush rush moment, but...
Yes, that is it. Yeah, when Key and Peele's characters are describing how to get the key.
Yes.
And the final one where they slowly rise up from the person when they're sleeping.
It's amazing.
I think it's the loudest laugh I get out of any of these films. And it's also probably the least Toy Story-like joke.
Yeah.
I don't know what that says.
It's super surreal. It's weird. It's great.
What I will do, though, is stop my thoughts there because I can hear Ben, like, shuffling on his chair.
I was wagging my finger at my screen.
Oh, is that what that was?
I'm relieved in some way. I'm relieved.
Is that what they say? Can you hear the wagging? What? Me? Me?
Yeah.
All right, this film's awful. It's absolutely shocking. Absolute pure tripe. No, it is. It is. Just in its existence. I'm not saying, like, it pains me to watch this. There's films I've had more pain watching, like, The Interpreter or the remake of Solaris. But it's like, I know when Dee said, to me, it destroys the first three. Like, as a perfect, conceptualized, like, three-story arc structure, that exists in literature analysis. It's three acts. They work perfectly together. They've got lovely character development of if you consider it just as Buzz and Woody, or if you extend that to Buzz, Woody, and Jesse, who I think has a very good story arc. And then they all go to shit. They're all diminished. It doesn't really make sense. I don't like that it chooses to end through a weird romantic love is better than this friendship that has built at the core existence of Toy Story since its beginning, this Buzz and Woody all the way through. And then it's like, yeah, you know what, go for this lass that you've not seen in like 20 years who meant nothing to the series, who was a ornament. She wasn't even a toy. She's an ornament. She's a lamp. She's not anything. And even her as a character, it doesn't make sense. If it was that she went into the wild and then became this incredibly independent, resilient female character, which I think I completely makes sense why they want to do that. But there's that scene at the start where she's already that, and it doesn't make sense because she was never that throughout the other films. Like, and because of that, they don't just have that as a good character. They diminish Woody. They make him this kind of scatterbrain even more so. That doesn't feel like he's ever learnt from the previous endings of the films. It's like an episode of like The Simpsons where they have this ending of, oh, you know, I've learned. And then by the next one, he, you know, Homer's a blubbering slob that doesn't care for his kids anymore. Or you know, like Peter in Family Guy or something like that. It feels like they've learned nothing. They make Buzz a blubbering idiot who has to listen to the buttons on his chest to make decisions. And Jesse's just forgotten about because you already had a strong female character and you decided, no, we need a different one. And then don't get me started on this bloody, let's make a weird suicidal fork.
No, please go on it. Please do.
Well, it doesn't make sense because Pixar, as a up to this point, Pixar has done really, really well at making really good, in-depth, kind of serious themes and treating them with a lot of care, nuance, compassion, and, yeah, knowing when to make it light. You know, from Inside Out, Finding Nemo, someone jump out. Even like talking about like bloody dictatorships in The Bug's Life, but then you make a suicidal fork that just wants to throw its way, and you make a song about it where it's like, just come on then, come on then. If you went that to someone you knew who just thought, because that's what it's all about. Yeah, someone who doesn't see any point, it feels like they're trash. And you handle that by making a song like, cha-cha-la-la-cha-cha. Don't kill yourself, boy. Don't kill yourself. And not even that, it's on a railroad theme montage. I'll leave it there.
That's quite the opinion. I don't really know where to go from there.
The third one ends so well.
So does this one.
No, it doesn't, because Buzz. It should have ended with Buzz and Woody, and where he's gone to just some lass. And even worse, the bit before but there's a point where Woody, when she Buzz in the box, Woody almost leaves Andy. He loves Andy more than anything, and he almost gets in the box for Bo. What? That doesn't make sense, because the whole point of the first three is that. That's he has to move on from this thing, and that's it. It's the catharsis that is taking him so long to actually try and accept what is life without him. And he tries to make it as if, like, no, in a split decision, he almost just gave it up for a bit of tail.
Yeah, that is stupid. I agree.
Yeah, I do. I completely agree with that. That scene doesn't quite work. But I'm going to disagree with you on quite a few points here. But I'm sorry.
I'd be shocked if you didn't.
Well, I mean, I want to start off saying that I do think this film is fun. I agree with D. It's definitely the worst of the four. It's fine on its own as a kind of appendage to the three. I don't think it diminishes the original three. I think it tries to do something different, and it tries to take a slightly more mature tone, which I'll come on to in a second. I think the new characters, some of them are good for a few laughs. Forky, Ducky Bunny.
Ducky Bunny is fun. That's fun.
Not so much Duke Kaboom. Not so much Gabby Gabby. But, you know, there are some good ones in there. I do think, like you said, Ben, the original characters fade into the background. I don't know why they decided to introduce so many new characters when they already had too many. And especially after they introduced, like, 10 new characters in Toy Story 3, who are still there because they're Bonnie's toys, there's a lot of noise from characters trying to have a line. It was like they had the cast, so, like, we have to give each of them something to say in this film. But, like, even Buzz is reduced quite a lot in this film.
Oh, but as yeah, and the Buzz is the toy that you wanted. You know, it was this cool. He is so smart and quick thinking and dedicated to Woody on an equal level. And it doesn't.
Yeah,
in this
it's he's diminished, and I think the character that gets done the dirtiest is Jessie in this film. Like, she's nothing in this film.
She's a void.
Yeah. Yeah, she's like, she may as well not be in it. And I mean, I don't even remember seeing Bullseye as a character in this film. I'm sure he is there, but I don't remember it. So there are problems with it, and there are issues. I think you made some comments, Ben, about the whole idea of the original three being about Woody and Andy, which I think is essentially the arc. I don't think that Buzz is truly a part of it. I think Woody is the central character in the three films.
Yeah, fair.
And I think what they tried to do here is to look beyond what he had with Andy. And I think part of his issue throughout the entire series is that he is too committed to serving Andy. And I think that thing comes up in the third one, obviously, quite a lot. And it's how he separates himself from it. And I think in this, what we see is a continuation of that, of him still trying to repeat that pattern of being essentially locked into, like, serving a human.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I think what's nice about this film is that it allows him to choose happiness. Now, I agree that the romantic storyline has been shoehorned in, but I think that the theme makes sense as a 1-2-3-4 film series actually has a line through it that does connect up, because you see in the first film that he's lonely because he's selfish and he has no friends, and that puts him in this place. And then we learn, you know, what gets him out of that is learning to be friends with the other toys. And I think it's actually the grounding of having these good friendships with these other toys, which is the kind of what we get at the end of this film, that allows him to separate himself from them, from that position, and actually choose happiness. Mm, yeah. So I think that it does kind of have a logic to it, but I think it's better seen as a kind of appendix, a kind of
if this was
Disney Plus,
the Tower of Terror, if this was one of those straight to things, yeah, I wouldn't mind it at all. But I think it's the same thing, because I think by that logic, it stops you believing that Woody ever had catharsis in any, even just in the singular films, like him learning to respect an equal in the first one. Of feeling that, no, he never really learns, like that accepting of that. I've moved on from Andy in the third one, and now I'm with Bonnie. But he actually never really accepted that ever. That's what the next film always seems to kind of... That's what the fourth one seems to almost state, as if he's still not looking for himself. And by that logic, him going with Bo, he might not even... He's just a person that's constantly longing. To sum that up at the end of the third one was better than to sum it up at the end of the fourth one.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
I get what you're saying.
Sort of feel like if I was to do Toy Story 4 myself... Well, first of all, I wouldn't call it Toy Story 4. But I feel like they need to... As hard as it probably is, and executives would never go for it, I almost feel like they just need to make Woody and Buzz background characters in this, and have it as like the Andy era is over, now it's Bonnie's era, and have a new group.
And Toy Story Universe Phase 2.
Yeah, exactly. Like Toy Story Age of Ultron.
TCU.
Yeah.
But like something like that, way, so it didn't feel like, right, now we have to have these characters unlearn everything from the previous films. It could have just been a new story, starting a new trilogy if they wanted it.
That's what it feels like to me.
I mean, this is obviously my opinion, but I don't think that the lessons have been unlearned from the previous films. I think that there's like a subtle movement between them. I think what we have is the beginning, Woody's focus is being needed by Andy. And then I think as it moves on to three, it actually almost becomes he needs to be needed by the gang, the group. And it's not just being needed by Andy. I think you see that especially in the beginning of this fourth one, which is the story they tried to tell, is that he feels responsible for the other toys, which is why you have this dynamic shift where he's no longer the main toy and he's no longer has that responsibility. But I think by the end of the film, what he actually finds is that being a lost toy like Bo is actually a liberation. So actually not being, allowing yourself to not be needed is actually the win, which is what he's eventually led to from the very first film. So I do think that it is a continuation. I don't think it's an unlearning. I think it's just a subtle... You obviously have to reset, which I think we spoke about.
The logic is there. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, I don't think it's completely like idiotic and stupid. I think it's just... I think the catharsis at the end of the third one is all-encompassing for all the toys in that they all get what they want, whereas I feel like the fourth one, there's a... I mean, you can say it as an acceptance, but there's a separation, and that, yes, trying to find themselves as being... through different goals and different wants and drives. Like, you know, Buzz wants something different to Woody, or in a way they kind of want the same thing but separate. The third one worked on so many levels for kids to adults, and I feel like the fourth one doesn't.
What doesn't quite make sense actually in the third one is that he's moving from one place to a replica place, basically. And actually that's what they explore in this, is the idea that he has made a sideways step. So I think...
Yeah.
Where he ends up is a progression, and I feel like it does continue this theme of Woody being essentially a parent to a child, which we've obviously discussed before, and that actually this is him fully allowing himself to let that all go in pursuit of you know, his own happiness, because he's made his friends, the children he's worked with, happy. So children he's worked with, children who he's been a part of the family with, happy. So he doesn't need to continue to do so.
Yeah, I, like I said, I think there is. I think you can. It's that thing that of break you in any sequel. You have to break something off what you've already established in the previous episode. You have to do that, otherwise, And I think that annoys me, because I guess it's just personal criticism, because I feel like the third one is such a perfect ending that obviously you have to make it imperfect in order to have a fourth. And for me, that's what the fourth one does. It makes it imperfect. Those things make sense.
Yeah, and what this movie does set up is that, like, in Toy Story 6, let's say, Andy's going to go around to Bonnie's house and be like, can I see Woody? And she's going to go, I lost that, like, 10 years ago.
Yikes.
It'd be back in Mad Max version. But that's the thing. The fifth one will do the same in the fourth one, and that's the problem. You know, if they make a fifth Toy Story, they will have to break something from that relationship or that acceptance he's found as being a lost toy. And that's the flaw, I think, that they've now made for themselves.
Yeah, and I definitely don't disagree. I think that the first...
Why does Forky stay still?
Why did Buzz stay still? You know, this
because, Forky doesn't give a shit about anything at that point.
In fairness, the Buzz thing is explained, because isn't it that he doesn't want to be captured, so, like, he stays still not to be seen? Wasn't it? Is there an explanation like that?
That makes sense.
I don't think it does actually ever explain. I mean, unless it's explained outside the films, but it's definitely not in the first film. He just is that
don't
way.
Don't get it.
It's never clear.
I hate Forky. But
let's go through some facts, just to pull us away from discussing them.
Do you know there's a person that made a 6-hour documentary on YouTube about why this film shook?
Was that person you?
6 hours.
It seems like a lot of effort to say something incorrect. Yeah,
it's one of those things where, you know, I've not obviously watched it all, but the criticisms, you oversell the criticism, so therefore you diminish your actual accurate criticisms.
Yes.
it was one of the things where, like, he's watching it and keeps, like, pausing, going, pause, spelling mistake, continue.
Yeah. But it is that kind of, that frustration.
So, got some facts. So the film had a worldwide opening of $244.5 million, which was the biggest for an animated film at the time ever.
You know what's the highest now, Alex?
Yeah.
The Mario film.
Yeah, the highest opening weekend. It's the highest opening weekend of any animated film.
Oh my god, a lot of disappointed seats. It grossed essentially $1 billion worldwide, this film.
Massive.
Yes. So it was officially announced in 2014, which is 4 years after Toy Story 3. With everyone, I feel this is going to trigger Ben somewhere. With everyone involved very adamant that it was not a continuation of Toy Story 3. John Lasseter, who is the name that you will see across all Pixar films, believes that number 3 concluded the Woody Andy arc and that they wanted to take the film somewhere else. And they referred to it throughout production as a romantic comedy. Now, this was 3 where it ended up. So I don't know if they kind of intended it to be something other than what it ended up being. E.g. maybe without the character of Forky.
Well, at what point did John Lasseter... Was he still involved? Was he still kind of... When did he become persona non grata? Do you know,
I don't remember.
No, I can't remember if it was pre this or post this.
Well, I remember that. Well, I don't want to ruin Alex's facts, but I do know of somebody that left this project.
Go on.
Oh, you don't have this fact?
Well, I think I did read it, but go on. Yes, I'll say it.
Rashida Jones.
She was one of the original screenwriters.
Really? Yeah. She left because of John Lasseter.
Quincy Jones' daughter.
Yes, she is Quincy Jones' daughter.
It's where the film lost its mojo.
Is it true that Lotso was based on John Lasseter?
Oh, I don't know that actually. but he did. He did essentially. Made that he up. Did. Did you actually?
Yeah, just a huggy. I very like these hugs.
Let's not get into that. I don't want to say anything libelous. He
allegedly.
He did kind of pull out of this project, but I don't know if you were implying that he's no longer involved in Pixar. But he was still involved in Pixar when this film came out.
Yeah, yeah, no.
But he wasn't involved in this film. He kind of distanced himself from this film.
I would have as well.
But he was involved at the beginning. Well, not for that reason. He said he was too busy. But yeah, so the film was not only... the original idea was not only to rekindle the romantic interest between Woody and Bo Peep. Of course, that is what happens in the story. But the idea was that Bo Peep becoming a lost eye also reflects a fear Woody has throughout the series and challenges his worldview. So that was kind of it on a postcard, essentially. The plot on a postcard. That was the idea. Tim Allen, as we know, the voice of Buzz, said that the film's story was so emotional, Ben, that he couldn't even get through the last scene. Now, you might argue that emotion was confusion and anger, but he did not say that.
It's coming from the guy that still wants to make Santa Claus films.
We're still making the TV show. Yeah. God, they're awful. Similarly, Tom Hanks. Now, you can't say anything bad about Tom Hanks.
Oh, I can.
Called the film's ending scene a moment in history. Now, he doesn't say whether it was a good one or a bad one.
That's like saying the reviews when it's like, this was a film.
My favourite part of the movie is it felt like a movie.
Everyone's quite fake. Maybe not quite as fake as Harry Styles talking about Daniel Garland. But yeah, so Tom Hanks said that it would be the final instalment, but in February of this year, then, Pixar's CCO and franchise alumni, Pete Docter, said that they will be doing a fifth film. So he announced the fifth Toy Story film. And he said it will be surprising and will have cool things you've never seen before.
Great, great. I'm sold. Now he's brought me back in.
And it can't be any worse than Lightyear.
It really can't. Because wow, that was
truly awful.
It was
truly, truly awful. We talk about films with literally zero humour.
Does it have a song?
I don't think it does, actually. I mean, it might have one associated with it, but there wasn't any.
Because we need to figure out what we're doing next year.
We'll just find another Randy Newman song.
Monsters, Inc.
Monsters, Inc. it is. Make our way through the Pixar films. So yeah, that's kind of it we'll have on the film. Those are the facts.
Respect.
So should we move on to the song? Mm-hmm.
Let's go for it.
The song, as we've already said, is called I Can't Let You Throw Yourself Away by Randy Newman, of course. The song comes at roughly around the third of the way through the film. Now on a road trip, the song accompanies a comical montage of Woody's attempts to prevent Forky from literally throwing himself away. So Dee, what are your thoughts?
I think a song has never struggled as much to fill a runtime than this song has. Even the name of the song seems like it's long on purpose to try compensate for it, like only just limping over 2 minutes long. And it has, what, like 8 different lines in the entire thing? It's not very good, especially compared to his previous efforts. This one leaves absolutely zero emotional impact on me.
So you mentioned the previous efforts there. I feel like I remember that you and Ben were not fans of the song from Toy Story 3.
Comparatively to the first one.
Yeah, but you think this is worse still?
Yeah, this one reverberates backwards in time, makes the first two like perfect. So it leaves no emotional impact, I think, this song. Maybe it doesn't even leave an impact at all, now I'm saying it out loud.
Yeah.
It repeats the same line over and over again, like 100 times. But I literally wouldn't have had a clue how the song went if I didn't have to listen to it for this podcast. And I've seen the film, I've heard it 100 times, did it at the Oscars, nothing, just don't remember it. It almost feels like Pixar just felt the need to have a Randy Newman song in the film and just called him up and said, Randy, we need you for the new film. He said, cool fam, what's it about?
Cool fam.
Pixar responded, well, it's about Woody not letting someone throw themselves away. And Randy Newman was like, give me 5 minutes, tops.
Well, it's funny you say this. So director Josh Cooley said that he hired it to return because he couldn't imagine making a fourth Toy Story film without Randy Newman, literally what you just said. In an interview to Variety magazine, Cooley said that there were three people that I wanted to make sure were feeling the story. Tom Hanks, Tim Allen and Randy Newman. It took a while to get the story right, but once we were feeling right about it, we went to Randy's house and pitched him. It was so important for me to have his approval. So yeah, basically.
Right, that makes me hate Tim Allen. So you're telling me they pitched the idea and just basically was like, yeah, Buzz is going to become basically just very, very weak-minded in every way. And he was like, "This is, I love it. Emotional. Tears to my eyes." Probably dabbing them with wads of hundreds.
Do you want to give your opinions on the song? I'm assuming you're not a fan.
Well, yeah, I don't know what's worse. it's the same point I made earlier. Like, the melody is pretty forgettable. It's kind of a real railroad song in that, you know, there's kind of the chugging away of it, which makes sense because it's kind of like during the travel montage sequence, but it's completely throwaway. The lyrics-wise, on paper, they kind of like seem like they're trying to be uplifting. Like, you're talking to someone who, yes, in Forky's case, is someone who thinks that they are worthless. But, like, as a core, if you just take that away from the melody and what's going on screen, it's just... It seems devoid of that grace you should give that topic. Because if, like I say, I give Pixar credit, you're making comparisons with the sort of a view of like, well, finding meaning to your life and finding that your life has worth and purpose. And that's the role of Forky. But you do it with such cack-handedness. it's just a joke. And I don't get that because I just don't understand why it's done in such a way. Like, you feel like you can kind of just make it such a joke. And I'm not saying it's not, there's not funny elements of it, but it just feels weird to do that, especially in, you know, this film was only 3 years ago, and the kind of the, how much of a hot, like, topic mental health is, it just feels very odd to me.
Yeah, I think the song and the film have to almost be viewed through the lens of Woody, because I don't think they're trying to tell a Forky story through the song, because it's I Can't Let You Throw Yourself Away.
Yeah.
So it's Woody,
yeah.
It's once again, it's Woody's commitment to helping the other people in the group. And you can see that throughout the montage, he's struggling to cope with doing this, because, you know, Forky is relentless in trying to achieve his one goal of becoming trash. And if we then take away the idea of being thrown away, again, it's not really talking about Forky. I think it's being viewed through the eyes of Woody, who sees being thrown away or being a lacking purpose as the worst possible thing. And that is kind of what Woody, Forky's character is there to represent, because he's a character who only wants that and sees his entire purpose as being disposable, which, you know, toys can be in a lot of ways, especially once they've lost their use. And I think the idea is at this point in the film, it is the most important thing to Woody to be of purpose or of use to a child. So I think that is what they're trying to get across.
I that makes sense, but then it also has the lines like, don't you want to see the sunset? Don't you want to see a sunrise? Which is not anything to do with Woody. That's literally just like, I've got to get you through this.
Yeah, it's him trying to make a case to himself as well for purpose. Like, what is the purpose? Yeah, because it's talking, it's metaphorically about purpose. I don't think the lines necessarily have to be literal. Mm. I think it's talking about, it's trying to make Forky see why it's important to exist when Forky doesn't believe that it is. No, it's about purpose, and the whole story is about Woody's purpose.
Which is a great message. If you didn't do it as a railroad theme,
I get take your points. Like, I think that's what they're trying to do. I think the placement of the song is weird in comparison to the other films.
Because
it doesn't feel like an important moment in the film.
No, none whatsoever. If you think of like, You've Got a Friend of Me, is the opening title card, and almost kind of sets a kind of an overarching theme of the entire trilogy of either Buzz and Woody or Woody and Andy.
Do you think, so talking about that, do you think that, now we're talking about the entire series as a whole, do you think that that song almost casts a shadow over the other films in that they can't get away from the fact that that song was so loved? And they tried to do a new song in each one and none of them have ever lived up to it.
Well, see, I think the Sarah McLachlan one is quite well known.
It's a good, but as I think it was Dee who was very strongly pointing it out, there were issues with its placement in the film and it felt odd. It's a really good song. I think it's a really nice song, and I think it does a lot of good in the film in some ways in telling Jesse's story, but it feels odd in placing. You're always comparing it to the original song, which still features in every single film.
So they're
aware of the power of that song and its overall message and how well
it works. But friendship is put aside in this film.
Yeah, I think this song, and I guess everything in this episode, is making me realise Maybe the problem with Toy Story 4 is that there's too much trying to happen.
Yeah.
It feels like they need to pick a story, like, let's just do Forky and Woody trying to be almost like his sage. Let's do Bo Peep and Woody. Let's do the thing in the antique shop, like with Buzz being trapped in there. It feels like there's too many, like almost like too many writers trying to do their own Toy Story story. It almost feels like it should have been a 6-episode Disney Plus show, I guess.
Yeah, it feels like they came to it. They're like, we're writing Toy Story 4. There's a character of Bo Peep that they had kind of hinted at, like a romantic relationship, very briefly in Toy Story 1 and 2. Like the scenes are really small.
Well, yeah.
Let's bring that in as a main theme. Oh, but actually, we want to make it a road movie. So let's have this character of Forky and the two stories. Literally, it's half and half, isn't it? The first half is a road movie with Forky. Exactly. The second half is them trying to patch together this romance story.
They feel like two different episodes.
Yeah, they don't work together. They don't cross over well. And I think they're both okay on their own. And I think maybe it was two, like you said, maybe it was two separate films. Maybe that should have been 4 and 5. I don't know, but and they try. It feels like they tried to tie them together through this idea of being thrown away and whether it was a good thing. Well, being thrown away, but also of purpose. And what is the purpose of, you know, it's about essentially about the meaning of life, isn't it? Is it about personal happiness? Is it about doing, you know, is it about serving your family, your friends, you know, and being there for them? It's kind of, it's weighing up those two things and trying to make a decision. But then they added all this existentialness to it through the character of Forky that kind of takes it to a place that doesn't quite gel, I suppose.
Yeah.
But, I think that the song is trying to capture those themes. I just think, probably it's hackneyed, it's forced in, and like you say, and it's probably tonally not quite right.
I just think it's tonally odd, because I think, like, if you can just take it at face value, I think there's a lot of humour and fun in that. But Pixar has done so well for so many years in plate juggling of so many different levels that you, in a way, they've made the stick which you beat them over the head with now, because you give them credit for being able to do multi-layered things for kids, things for adults, and so you can't get away from that. You can't just have that as a bit of fun anymore, because you've got lyrics that can often be construed in so many different ways and so many different levels, from a character point of view, from a metaphorical, from the narrative perspective, and then outside standing alone as a just a piece of music, and this one doesn't.
Yeah, I think you've summed that up quite well.
Did you guys listen to the other song from the song?
Yes.
Yes.
So just for the audience, there is a second lyrical song, which is called The Ballad of a Lonesome Cowboy by Chris Stapleton, although, of course, it is written by Randy Newman.
Good old Chris Stapleton.
Do you have any thoughts on this one? Would this have been better as the main song? I mean, it's listed somewhere as the main song, but just before we go into it, actually, the I Can't Let You Throw Yourself Away was nominated for Best Original Song. To continue the trend of Toy Story songs being nominated, although unlike the previous song from Toy Story 3, it did not win. And it was beaten by a song from Rocket Man, which is called, in brackets, I'm Gonna, close brackets, Love Me Again, by Elton John and Taron Egerton, which I don't remember. I've seen that film. It's a good film. I don't remember it at all. But anyway, so Ballad of a Lonesome Cowboy. Do we have any additional thoughts about this? Feel similar about?
Yeah, I mean, like I say, it's hard to not say better, because the other ones, I think it's just pretty naff. I think it is better, but it just doesn't have the gravitas or weight to kind of stand in a better bracket in which it's worth comparing it. In the same way, I think the lyrics, and if you built that into a bit more, even if it was Chris Stapleton does stadium country, give it a bit more of that stadium country feel, make more ballad, add a bit more of a big band and some, you know, some strings and brass. And then the weight of that, I think, would be quite an interesting, like, dichotomy to have the idea of a lonesome cowboy and all this kind of extreme noise around it, and instead they just turn it into just a random country song that could be on Woody's Roundup.
We have very similar thoughts on this then. Can I ask, when is this used? I don't remember this at all.
I don't think it's used in the film. I don't
it's
remember.
It's like a credit one.
Credits?
I think it must be a credit song.
Similar to what Ben said, it feels like, not the performance, but like the actual song itself feels like a leftover from Woody's Roundup. Just obviously the singer's more contemporary country rather than old-timey Western country. If that was the case, then it's perfectly serviceable.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's supposed to be a song in its own right, it's just completely hollow. Yeah. It doesn't feel like a real song. Like, country music, generally, is about soul and passion.
Mm.
This has none of that. It's cold, and not cold like an ice cold beer. It's cold like a soulless body. Which is why I think it feels like a TV show outro ordered by some producer, but it doesn't feel like an actual song, especially not a Chris Stapleton song. Where's the heart?
It's interesting though what Alex was saying before, you know, about this, like, almost this, there's two narratives that kind of have been squashed together into one film. If the narrative was just focused on the lonesome cowboy-esque and him trying to find his place, and this song could have worked with that, and so maybe at one point this was that part, this was the theme song for that part of that film, and it was just, and they just didn't know where to go with it. Maybe, you know, some early screenings and Forky was just so damn hilarious that they're like, right, this is what we need, a song, this is where Randy's going. Because I don't even know who wrote that song. Did Chris write it?
Do you think there's a Randy version, like a demo version somewhere?
There is a Randy Newman version.
So, yeah.
Oh, wow.
I mean, obviously, he's not a country singer, writer, so maybe that's the problem. Maybe that's why it doesn't come across in the way that you've described it. And I agree. I mean, I don't think it's a brilliant song. I think it's better. I think it's a better song than the other one. I think it's really simplistic, though. I think it does... It kind of directly tries to cut to just, like, the core message of the overall franchise. It's essentially trying to imitate the idea of the original You've Got a Friend, but not doing it well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this idea that Woody was selfish and lonely, now he's got friends, and that's it. that's essentially it.
Yeah, absolutely, doesn't it? No, there's no way.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it kind of links to what I said before, in that the idea that Woody having these friends and gaining these friends is what's given him the strength to choose personal happiness and love, rather than serving everyone else, which he's kind of been used to doing over the last couple of films, and taking that leadership role over the group, and now he's actually, you know, doing something for him. And he's been able to do that because of what he's gained from them and what he's given to them. And I think that's kind of what it's trying to play on, but it does it too simplistically.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't give any of that depth of message. And I think that's the problem with it. And, you know, if we're talking about the Toy Story songs generally, these two are, you know, weaker than everyone that's come before. But I think they do get progressively weaker. Yeah. And I don't think anyone would argue against that.
I'm wondering if there's actually like a thing with just how music is used now in a lot of modern films. And I think we've brought this up a few times with the Oscar talk. A lot of songs that get nominated are credit songs. Like, I think they're just almost used less and less as part of narrative structure and as a storytelling device. And because I don't feel like the Randy Newman song is used as a storytelling device. It is just it does feel like a place filler.
Yeah, it's like we need a Randy Newman song because it's Toy Story.
Yeah,
that's
it's just a little montage, and we need to get quickly through.
But if we're talking about Pixar, we've spoken about Pixar in this way before. They're not known for having songs.
True. No.
They did it in the first Toy Story, but that probably is because it was because it was a movement on from Disney films.
Well, I don't think they could have ever predicted that it to have that impact culturally, you know, as a almost as a marker for Pixar in general.
Yeah, because the only other Pixar film I could think that is really heavily led with songs is Coco, and that is it, I think, really.
Because it's not I forget what you call it. Was it diegetic music? That's the thing. They're singing it in the film, so it's a musical.
Yeah, it's a main plot point. The point is that it's about music, so that makes sense.
Exactly, and not in that kind of like just as a pure storytelling device. It's not common at all, is it? Right.
Top five.
We've done various iterations of this, but I was quite interested, and I was just delving down to try and learn what are. Especially just trying to credit this, but what movies have sold the most merchandise of all time? So credited to specific movies. So what are the top five movies? Not franchise, but just like a movie that's kind of credited, you know, so I guess officially released merchandise for that film. So what are the top five?
It feels like Star Wars is going to take up a lot of these.
Star Wars is number one, the first Star Wars.
I was going to say Toy Story.
But which one?
The first one.
Ah, so wait one second. These have been grouped into franchises.
Oh.
There you go. They've been grouped into franchises. So Star Wars, the franchise, has made $12 billion in merchandise. Toy Story is fifth. Yeah, $2.4
billion. Harry Potter, presumably.
No.
No?
No.
Not only if it classifies it as book merchandise.
Yeah, because things. Okay. It's probably not the IP related to the film.
It's specifically like Warner Brothers owned.
Feels like it should be included.
I don't make the lists.
does like the Marvel franchise count?
Well, the Avengers is on there. Like they've broken down Marvel films But the Avengers film, specifically Avengers
franchise. What is this list? Some are grouped, some are not.
Well, I think it goes into what is kind of credited to the actual product.
Okay.
So you got Star Wars at 1, and you got Toy Story at 5.
Wow, Ghostbusters.
No, no.
Despicable Me.
No, and Despicable Minions. Me was in the top 10, yes, but not.
God, how could that not be in there?
Yeah.
I thought I was onto a winner then.
Yeah.
Ice Age.
No, one, two of them are franchises, and one is just a single film.
Just a one film?
One film.
Wow.
Two of them, one's Disney, one's Pixar, and one is just a huge action franchise.
Transformers.
Sci-fi action. Transformers. Yeah, the Michael Bay ones have done, like, incredible for Transformers merchandise.
Frozen.
There you go. Well done. 5.3 billion. Specifically, a lot of this is credited to the Elsa dress.
God.
One more.
And then the last one. You said the last one was another Pixar film.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Pixar. A Pixar franchise.
Finding Nemo?
No.
Incredibles?
Cars.
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 Lightning McQueen.
Of course it's Cars.
Sold. Yeah, this is number two. It's almost 10 billion, apparently, as of 2022, which is absolutely huge. Lightning McQueen.
Inexplicable.
Yeah, kids just flipping love that Mr. McQueen.
They just love Owen Wilson.
I mean, if I'd have an Owen Wilson doll. Specifically of that one from the advert when he's on the, I can't remember if he's selling guitars or sofas.
Sofas. Yeah.
Sofas. Shakespeare, man.
Well, Shakespeare waxing a little beard.
I was the other career.
Love that advert so much.
There we go. Well done, guys.
I mean, Cars 2 is like, you have to see it to believe it. It's wild.
I'll take your word for it. Maybe if it's got a song in it, I'll maybe watch it at that point.
I mean, Cars 1 does.
Maybe that could be the birthday one next year. Well, hang on. That's the song from Cars 1?
Yeah.
Well, that song is in Cars 1. Yeah, I assumed it was from that film.
That is the main song from Cars 1.
That surely predates Cars, though, right?
No, I don't know. A train. I mean, it's old. The first Cars is old. You're looking it up.
It's by Rascal Flatts. It's not right. Yeah, it's from Cars, yeah.
Holy shit.
Do you know what's the best toy-related film?
The best toy-related film? Toy Soldiers? Yeah,
absolutely. Originally, I'm just looking it up now.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't realize it was called Major Chip Hazard. What a character.
Wait, Toy Soldiers? Do you mean Small Soldiers?
Wait, why is this called Toy Soldiers on here? Why is
yes,
it called...
that's on.
Isn't Toy Soldiers an Eminem song?
It is an Eminem song, you're right.
Oh, so the Cars version, the version from Cars was by Rascal Flatts for Cars, but it wasn't the original song.
Oh, well, that's a fun fact for when we do the episode next year.
It's a song by a Canadian musician called Tom Cochran from his second studio, Mad Mad World.
So how are we going to do this next segment? Are we doing movie or song? Or are we doing best song?
Like I said, I think we'll do both, because the better song is Lonesome Cowboy. And the movie is better than the song, because there is actually some decent things in the movie. There is nothing decent about the song.
Let's really... Was the film better than you thought it was going to be then?
Better than I thought. No, it was worse than I thought.
You actually think it was worse than you thought?
Because I went, as soon as it was announced, I hated it. I went in expecting to hate it, but I was hopeful that because I loved the first three, like, you know, maybe there was something, maybe there is something that I'm missing. And I quickly realised I was missing nothing. And the only thing I was missing was my home.
I mean, the song, like we've said, is the Ballad of the Lonesome Cowboy is the better song. I think the film is better than both songs. I quite like the film. I mean, I don't think it...
You've seen it enough. You've got Stockholm Syndrome.
Yeah, I mean, that does help. But I didn't think it was as bad as I thought it was going to be. I remember really? Getting to there and being like, yeah, I mean, it's not as good as the
would
first
Would you both
three.
Accept that it would be better if it didn't exist?
I feel like yes. I think if it didn't exist, I don't think it would
yeah,
be missed.
Yeah, it's fine that you've accepted that it's fine and there's merits to it and you enjoy it enough, but
yeah,
it would have been better.
I don't think it needed to be made. I don't think it adds anything that wasn't yeah. there.
That's fine. I'm happy.
Yeah, I think it's just in the wrong medium. It shouldn't have been a movie.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I don't guess. Yeah, you can disregard the TV stuff. Although I think it does. One of them does really good for Jessie's arc about, you know, her claustrophobia.
Yes, good. There's Toy Story of Terror.
I wish then I had Jessie's arc.
But again, they disregard that because she's scared of being in the dark again in this one, so I don't know what's real.
I would also pick the movie over the song. But out of the two songs, I would still probably pick the Randy Newman one, just because I feel like the Lonesome Cowboy one is it's just so empty. I can't...
Yeah, fair.
At least the Randy Newman has some sort of bounce to it, even if it doesn't feel correct in the film or comparison to the previous films, it doesn't leave a hollow feeling in me like The Ballad of the Lonesome Cowboy does. That brings an end to another episode of That Song from That Movie. Let us know which one you prefer, the movie or the song, or which song you think is best on our various social media platforms on Twitter, Instagram and Hive. Ben, what is our handle?
At TSFTMpod.
You can also help the podcast by sharing this on a random subreddit. But Alex, what random subreddit should they pick this week?
Owen Wilson. Waxing that little beard.
Have you ever seen that weird Owen Wilson action movie?
I Spy?
No. Like, he's trying to be like, it's like a really serious Owen Wilson action movie. Like, where he's like a proper action star.
Doesn't sound real.
No Escape. No Escape.
It sounds like an SNL skit.
Sure, it's just not another advert for sofa. It's just a really long one.
You can also help the podcast by buying our merch, signing up to our Patreon, leaving a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts, and just telling your friends about the podcast. All the links and information's in the show notes. So all that's left now is to do some goodbyes. So it's goodbye from myself. Goodbye. And goodbye from Alex.
Bye, Rajan. Bye.
And goodbye from Ben.
I am Archer, emissary of the Gorgonites.
So goodbye, everybody.
See ya.
Bye.
I can't imagine.
This might actually be the last time I ever talk about this film.
Did you find it cathartic, Ben?
What, talking about it? Yeah, actually, I feel better about it now. Yeah.
Well, that's good.
You know what? Maybe it's a good film.
I don't know if I've ever heard you speak so passionately about a film. He is so angered.